This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 23rd of November 2018. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 23rd of November. Now, this week our editors were Sheila Shepherd, Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard and Jean Gardner. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now, the main headlines this week are congestion charge threat if plans fail, thousands out for the big switch on, and final ideas crystallising for bid to revamp neglected public gateway. So we have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather.
Congestion charge threatens if plans fail. Proposals revealed to keep more cars out of Winchester city centre. Drivers could face congestion charges in Winchester if plans to cut city centre traffic fail to work, according to a new draft city strategy. It comes as Hampshire County Council, working with Winchester City Council, launched a consultation over proposals for the Winchester Movement strategy. The emerging strategy document, released earlier this week, suggested a range of measures in a bid to cut city centre traffic and improve air quality. They include increasing capacity for park and ride services to keep cars out of the city centre, giving buses priority over cars through measures such as bus gates in Southgate Street and Chesil Street, which would only allow public transport and bikes to use the road, and bus lanes in Andover Road, consolidating parking in larger out-of-city centre car parks rather than increasing city centre spaces, enhancing cycling and pedestrian routes across the city with a reallocation of road space along the full length of North Walls, and changing parts of the one-way system to include two-way traffic between Friars Gate and Eastern Lane, allowing drivers in and out of the city without having to circle around the entire system, reducing St George's Street to one lane with spaces for cyclists, bus stops and deliveries, and improving pedestrian priority for Drury Street. If those measures fail to improve congestion in the city, a range of charging zones could be considered. The strategy is being put together by both councils to help shape transport in the city over the next 20 to 30 years. Following the current consultation, which runs until 11:59 p.m. on January the 13th, a final document is expected to be published next spring to help deliver improvements and secure funding. It says, traffic demand is set to grow, and over time more people are expected to come to Winchester for a range of purposes.
And now we've got the second headline story, read by Noel.
Thousand out for the big switch on. The festive spirit has well and truly arrived in Winchester, boosted by the light switch on last week. More than 12,000 people were left dazzled by this year's light display, hosted by Rich Clark from Heart Radio and put on by Winchester Business Improvement District, BID. Three local heroes who had been nominated in the weeks before the event were given the honour of pushing the plunger to light up the city. The first was Maddie Thompson, who was chosen for her work as a clinical matron for the palliative care team and her support for the Winchester Hospice Appeal. The second was Anita Clark, who raised £400,000 for the Emmaus Hampshire charity, while Mitch Allen was the third guest welcomed onto stage for his efforts to help the community, specifically the sponsored marathon that he ran in aid of type 1 diabetes. And this is accompanied by, of course, picture down the high street, ablaze with the new Christmas lights.
And it's over to Jane for the third headline story,
which is final ideas crystallising for bid to revamp neglected public gateway. Final ideas are crystallising for the revamp of a Winchester city centre public gateway. St Maurice's Covert has been in need of regeneration for years to combat its neglect and magnetism for antisocial behaviour. City Council appointed placemaking practice Scott Whitby Associates has been drawing up ideas and consulting the public since 2016. Project leader Chen Mingtiong presented the latest ideas to the town forum. She said the aim was to declutter the space, removing the waste bins and bollards, and improving the links to the outer close and the cathedral. Lighting will be improved, a new ceiling installed, and new paving laid to make the area more attractive and to highlight its heritage. The gravestones would be relocated to inside the tower of St Maurice's Church. The hope was that the covert would become a space where people could sit and for relaxation. Councillor Fiona Mather said improving the area also depended on the near neighbours, Debenhams, and the Mercure Hotel on the other side of Market Lane. She said, "I live in faith that Debenhams will do something about their shop windows, dressing shop windows. It's an art that seems to have passed them by." The car park at the Mercure Hotel said, Councillor Mather, was disgusting. And this is accompanied by three photos trying to show what could happen at St Maurice's Covert. The main photo is the back of St Maurice's Church. That's next to where currently is the public toilets. And they have removed the flat gravestones from the floor there, but they have installed some concrete blocks for people to sit on. The other two photos show the covert from the main road between Debenhams and Greggs the Bakers as it is now, very dark, with a new sort surface, but particularly with new lighting above where we often have charity stalls, and the flower man has his plants so that you can see underneath the covert.
And that concludes the headline stories. Now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, and then we go to editorial comment, question and answer my Winchester, first person, and then Belgarum diary. And we'll end with items of general news. And I'll start with the death notices. Cox, Anna Cox, aged 80, at the Abbotswood Court Care Home, Romsey. Dibsdall. Maurice Charles Henry Dibsdall of Colden Common, who was a Korean War veteran, peacefully aged 89. Fennell, Jennifer Fennell, peacefully aged 89. Guiton, Nicholas Francis Le Hardy Guiton, peacefully at the Dower House, Headbourne Worthy, aged 88. Little, Ronald Ron Little, peacefully aged 89. Pell, Cliff Pell, aged 80. Pink, Evelyn Flora Eve Pink, aged 85. Poor, Violet Poor, formerly of New Road Colden Common, latterly of Flowerdown Care Home, aged 90. And finally, Woodrow, Hugh Woodrow, peacefully aged 83 at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. And now we've got Christian comment, read by Jane.
Christian comment this week is the differing consequences of silence. On our way home from Scotland, we were listening to an audiobook when I was struck by a phrase that the author used to describe a poignant moment in the unhappy life of one of the main characters: the indescribable pain of silence. This made me wonder what it could mean. Sometimes silence does mean pain. It's painful to talk about what hurts. It's painful to tell someone that they have broken your heart. And it's painful to show someone how vulnerable you are and how much they mean to you when you are not sure of how they will react or what their feelings are. Silence is perhaps better than being thought weak or irrational. Sometimes silence can save you from further rejection or from hearing things you would rather not hear. Real silence, however, is rare. Noise is one of the great menaces and constants of modern life. There are over 500 complaints received each day, and 1 in 10 households now consider their lives are ruined by noise. The devil, in C.S. Lewis's Screwtape Letters, said, "Noise, which alone defends us from silly qualms, despairing scruples and impossible desires." That's why, although we hate noise, we are also rather afraid of silence. Silence can bring to the surface all kinds of uncomfortable thoughts which we'd rather not face. Yet silence is essential, because those thoughts do have to be worked through. And then that silence leads into stillness, stillness of the mind's racing and the heart's restlessness. That points to what T.S. Eliot called the still point of the turning world. But how to find that silence? Long country walks, but then there's often the noise of traffic. Indoors is not much better with the roar of aircrafts overhead. A recording technician once cut up bits of silence between music and speakers to make a tape of silence. Hopefully we are not all that desperate. The psychological and physical effects of noise are now well documented. We all need some peace and quiet for our sanity, and from a religious point of view, silence prepares the way for stillness. "Be still and know that I am God," says a verse in one of the Psalms. And I love the answering response in another psalm, "Truly, my soul waiteth still upon thee." Hopefully, silence in our worship is not painful and helps us to get closer to God. And that was from Rosemary A. Baker.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. At 9 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Heather.
George Helke writes, "Missed chances. Sir, as we near a final deal on our proposed exit from the EU, I am increasingly concerned that, incredibly, senior members of the government seem to be unaware of the trade possibilities we actually enjoy from within the EU. One hears frequent claims that leaving the EU will open up wonderful new opportunities for our exports. However, comparison of our trade figures with those of Germany show that it would be possible for us to greatly increase our trade with countries such as China and India without leaving. Germany's exports to these countries are actually between 4 and 5 times ours. We'd be over the moon if we did the same. Those making claims for the advantages of trading from outside the EU should ask themselves whether they think that the owners of a corner shop can compete with large chains such as Tesco. They must know that Tesco-like businesses have far more clout when negotiating the prices they pay for their stock. In trade negotiations, we are at present in the position of a Tesco-like business. But outside the EU, we would be in the position of the corner shop. There is no way we'd be able to obtain as good a deal as we can at the moment. George Helke, Edgar Road, Winchester."
Carol's got the second letter.
Yes, from E. Wright, who says, whose headline is "The Poor Master." "Sir, there are Remainers and there are Ramoners. Remainers have accepted with good grace the result of the referendum. Ramoners never will. Julian Chisholm, letters November the 1st, calls for a people's vote, which is exactly what we had in 2016. A second referendum is deeply patronising, would solve nothing, and is wanted only by those who have never accepted the result. Ramoners, often with their comfortable lifestyles, fail to recognise that many who voted Leave did so because they feel they have been left behind and their localities blighted and neglected. Fishing fleets in their communities have been devastated. At the same time, economies in southern Europe have seen youth unemployment rise to 50%, and Greece, with crippling debts, sees many of its people, particularly pensioners, destitute. Italy has suffered years of stagnation, and its latest budget, a genuine attempt to break the Gordian knot, has been rejected by the unelected commission in Brussels. Furthermore, to suggest that Brexit threatens peace in Northern Ireland is both ludicrous and provocative. There is already a border for tax, currency, excise, VAT, health, security, etc. I want my country to be sovereign again. To quote Michael Caine, I would rather be a poor master than a rich servant. Or maybe Thomas Jefferson, peace, commerce and firm friendship with all nations but entangling alliances with none. At this time of year, when we remember the millions who fought and died for our freedom, we should also reflect that it is not for us to give that freedom away. E. Wright, Alexandra Road, Chandler's Ford.
And here's another Brexit letter from Nick Ray. Sir, a no deal or other Brexit could disrupt the supply of essential medicines throughout the UK, according to a number of reports. Given Winchester MP Steve Brine's government role, Parliamentary Under Secretary of State with specific responsibility for public health and primary care, could I ask our MP to confirm, via these pages, that normal supplies of medicines and medical treatments, such as radioisotopes for cancer therapy, will be maintained for all his constituents, young and old, whatever deal finally emerges? And, in the absence of any reply from him, how are we to interpret this? In addition, Steve's now ex-ministerial colleague Joe Johnson on BBC Today, Radio 4's Today programme called for another referendum, saying the Brexit now being offered falls spectacularly short of what has been promised. It would be a democratic travesty to not have another vote, and Brexit could also inflict untold damage on our nation. So, perhaps Mr. Brine MP could also tell us if he will now back a people's vote given this, and that Remain was the majority wish of the Winchester electorate during the referendum. And that was from Nick Ray, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Lacking solidarity, Barbara Knight writes, Sir, on November the 7th, the Conservative City Councillor chose to move a procedural motion rather than debate Brexit and the national call for a people's vote, following a motion by Lib Dem Councillor Jane Rutter. One Conservative councillor emailed the following. As a local authority, we should be concentrating on delivering high-quality local services and projects within the district, and it is not our remit to debate and vote on national issues. What a shame. Winchester could not show solidarity with communities less fortunate than ours and stand with the many councils who have called for a people's vote. Last week saw the publication of the interim report of the United Nations Special Rapporteur on extreme poverty in the United Kingdom. It is a shameful indictment of the world's fifth largest economy. Not only are people living below the breadline, but communities are already impoverished through massive cuts to council funding. Many local authorities now provide only basic services. Rapporteur Alston observed that this is damaging the fabric of British society and eroding its sense of community and will exacerbate the impact of Brexit on the most disadvantaged members of society. Six of Northern Europe's poorest areas are in the United Kingdom, five in England alone. Britain will only be great again, the clarion call of the Leave campaign, when poverty and the extreme inequalities in our society are addressed. Unfortunately, even the most ardent Brexiters are now admitting Brexit will make the country poorer. Barbara Knight, Byron Avenue, Winchester.
And you'll be pleased to hear that this letter from Andrea Owen is not about Brexit. It's headed Carbon Confusion. Sir, last week's Chronicle, November the 15th, gave a bewildering glimpse into the disjointed thinking of our local councillors. One article reports the shocking increase in vehicle-generated carbon dioxide emissions in Winchester. City is amongst worse for carbon. The City Council claims that it's making good progress in reducing the carbon footprint. It's also looking forward to the emerging Winchester Movement Strategy, quotes exciting plans for city transport, being drawn up in conjunction with Hampshire County Council. These plans are getting Councillor Jan Warwick quite excited. They will address congestion and air quality, and although Councillor Rob Humby, Hampshire County Council, underlines the need to offer an excellent quality of life for those in the community, he appears not to consider the contribution public transport makes to cleaner air as relevant. That is shown by Hampshire County Council cutting a number of bus services. Bus cuts hit villages front. In the previous chronicle, we heard about Hampshire County Council's decision to switch off the streetlights for 3 hours each night, giving a saving of £230,000 a year across the county. If both councils stopped wasting money on questionable schemes, such as the station approach development, an estimated spend of £1.2 million on the design fees alone, setting up new agencies to recruit staff, giving advice and training to small businesses for the cost of a drink. The cost of a drink for those businesses might be a bus ride to the shops for someone without a car in Owsleberry. Could we not keep the lights on? And isn't it time we stopped wasting money on two authorities where councillors like Mr. Humby serve on both? Perhaps this would concentrate minds and encourage councillors to think about the day-to-day things which really matter, like removing leaves from our streets and pavements before they turn into compost, ensuring waste is collected from overflowing public waste bins, providing decent street lighting and pavements. Some of us ask why, if there really is money available locally to be spent on grandiose, high-profile schemes, can't we keep the streetlights on, have our streets cleaned occasionally, and even maintain the current minimal bus services to nearby villages? Andrea Owen, Culverwell Gardens, Winchester.
And this letter from James Anderson is headed No Exception. Sir, the article about South Wanston, which was Villagers' New Fight Against Housing Plan on November the 15th, deserves comment to redress the balance. WCC, I think that's Winchester City Council, through its partner, Harrer, wants to bust the settlement boundary onto a greenfield site. The bust is not through orderly and structured planning, but by gaming up rural exception site rules. As the title suggests, these are for exceptional circumstances that justify going outside normal planning, and South Wanston does not remotely qualify. Some 800 affordable homes are being built in Kings Barton, just 2 miles away, almost as many as affordable homes as there are total homes in South Wanston. People living in Kings Barton are close to South Wanston and may stand for it as parish councillors. Development of a 1 hectare greenfield plot is hardly much needed. To qualify for a rural exception, the parish council must show, firstly, it has identified a community need for priority housing, i.e. subsidised rented, net of the King's Barton effect. It has not. Secondly, the need is strictly local and is well defined, appeal court. It is not. Thirdly, and that the plan has clear community support, appeal court. It does not. In a WCC-HARAH-inspired campaign against South Wanston over the last 12 months, we have had a housing survey laughably bent all out of shape to get a particular result. Firstly, no mention that the plan was only for subsidised rented accommodation for priority cases. The community has been told throughout that it is affordable housing for residents. Secondly, a consultation event that was all smoke and mirrors. The parish council called an extraordinary meeting. So many turned up that not all could get into the pavilion. To the question, who supports the scheme, just 5 hands went up. South Wanston already hosts 1 exception site. The total of mortgage, rent and service charges comes to more than a straight mortgage. Occupiers can only buy up to 80% of the property. Resale is difficult and value is poor. One occupier reports that they are worse off than if they'd saved a full deposit. And that was from James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
Sir, Keith Karen Barrett writes, your editorial, More Misguided Cuts to Bus Services, November the 15th, is quite right to describe the proposed bus cuts as misguided. But unfortunately, we are doomed to go through this same sorry process year after year, as long as we have privatised services and a government committed to austerity policies. Sadly, local Conservative councillors seem unable to make the connection. Councillor Rob Humby, the Hampshire County Council Executive Member for Transport, who signed off the cuts, is quoted in your report, Exciting Plans for City Transport, Chronicle, November the 15th, as saying, getting in and around the city easily is vital to the future prosperity of Winchester. He's also apparently working with his Winchester City Council colleagues to develop an innovative transport strategy to support the city's businesses. How precisely bus cuts will continue to offer an excellent quality of life for those in the community? Well, it's a mystery. Councillor Rose Burns, speaking on behalf of her Hyde residents, said, I understand that our bus services need to be commercial. Now, that's obviously true for private bus companies, whose priority is keeping shareholders happy. But public transport is an essential service, which means councils have a duty to subsidise less profitable routes. Hampshire County Council's cuts, which inevitably have greatest impact on those totally dependent on buses, are certainly not right, but are consistent with Tory policy of making the poor, the elderly and the vulnerable pay the price of austerity. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Winchester.
And this is slightly about buses. Chris House writes, bus stop misery. Sir, can anyone tell me who decided to leave the side panels off many of the bus shelters dotted in and around Winchester? You know the ones I mean. The ones that when there is a strong cold wind and it's pouring with rain, you freeze and get soaking wet. Also, if you want to sit down on the cold metal seats, you can't because they are wet. How often, especially on a really windy day, does the rain and wind come straight down? If you want to know more about this, go and catch a bus at the stop just down from the entrance to the Winchester Hotel Worthy Lane, or the one opposite the exit to the hotel. Or, if you don't want to travel that far, there are three or four of these open-plan shelters in the new bus station. Have a happy winter. Chris House, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
And this letter from Mark Rowe is headed, We Should Never Forget the Fallen. Sir, I came down last week before and put my crosses in the Remembrance Garden at Winchester Cathedral. Then, on Sunday, I went down to the cathedral for the Remembrance service. It was both poignant and moving. The lady I stood next to was very helpful, plus all the cathedral staff did a wonderful job looking after people. After the service, seeing the wreaths laid brought a tear to my eye. Seeing also how the people of Winchester, like everyone across the country, mixed with service personnel was inspiring. I had my photo taken with the Royal Marine and helped others take photos also. In my view, Remembrance Sunday should never be scrapped, so future generations will get the chance to remember and be inspired by those great people who gave their lives for ours. And that was from Mark Rowe of Winchester.
And that's the end of all the letters to the editor. Thank you very much to all the contributors. It's time for your say. New bollards have been installed in Winchester High Street to replace the grey concrete anti-terrorist barriers. We asked people their views, and Heather's got the answers.
Ian Parsons, aged 75, a retired paint and decorator from Stanmore, said, they're okay, I guess they need to be there. What can you do with a bollard? You either paint them really nice and fancy, or you just leave them black and white. Carly Jenkins, aged 37, an admin assistant of Grantham Road Eastleigh, said, I haven't noticed them too much, which is a good thing, as they're not too ugly. I do think it's a good idea to have them. Anthony Mitchell, aged 53, a caretaker of the Valley, Stanmore, said, well, they won't be able to deter something really big, and something small will get through. If they work, they're good value. And Viv Parsons, aged 51, a personal relations manager, said, when I saw them, I thought they were striking. I honestly couldn't tell you why, but I am surprised that some people find them ugly.
And now we're going back through the mists of time into our dusty old files for historical news items from our from all the old dusty files. And we'll start with 25 years ago, read by Noel.
Yes, here's two items from Friday, November the 19th, 1993. Winchester Cathedral was filled to capacity on Sunday morning for the service to remember those who died in two world wars and more recent conflicts. Serving and former servicemen, relatives and friends joined the mayor, city councillors, the clergy and representatives of many local services and organisations to listen to the service before gathering outside to lay wreaths at the Cathedral War Memorial. The sermon was given by General Sir Hugh Beach, who served in the British Army for 40 years, was warden of St George House, Windsor Castle for 5 years, and is now chairman of the Church Army Board. He referred to the literary fables of author C.S. Lewis, who described how the devil did welcome war because the souls of those who offered up the noble sacrifice of their lives could not be claimed for hell. He used Lewis's fable to illustrate the importance of the quality of life over its length and to warn of the temptations resulted from living to middle age. And the other item: Twyford Parish Council has written to Winchester City Council threatening to report it to the local government ombudsman following its approval of a planned housing development at Manor Farm. Under the plans, many of the existing farm buildings will be demolished and up to 9 new homes will be created. 4 will be achieved by converting existing Victorian farm buildings and there'll be 5 new houses. But Parish Council Chairman Chris Corcoran claims that the City Council Planning Committee was wrong to give approval because it was aware that under the proposed district plan, the whole of Manor Farm would fall outside the village envelope in open countryside, making approval of such a housing development far more difficult, if not impossible. Under the existing plans, the farmyard falls within the village envelope. The parish council contends that some regard should have been paid to this emerging plan and that officers should have made members aware of the proposed changes. He and the parish council also feel that the proposed development is inappropriate since it fails to safeguard the future of the listed 16th century tithe barn, which dominates the site. Any development of this site should secure the future of the barn, and the rest will follow from that, he said.
Let's go back 100 years then, Jane.
50 years.
Oh, 50 years. Okie dokie.
50 years ago was Saturday, November the 23rd, 1968. Tenants of the Winchester City Council flats at Winnall have received an assurance this week that these blocks, the highest residential units in the city, are entirely safe. This follows an appraisal carried out at the behest of the Minister of Housing and Local Government, arising from the inquiry into the collapse of part of a tall block at Ronan Point, London. A circular from the Ministry calls for an appraisal of all blocks over 6 stories in height, built of large precast concrete panels to form load-bearing walls or floors. A letter from the town clerk to all occupiers at Braxton House, Craddock House, Dennett House and Earl House says, "I am asked to inform you that the consulting structural engineers who designed the Winnall flats have advised that the buildings can be regarded as continuous monolithic structures of very greatly superior strength when compared with the current types of industrialised buildings," the subject of the Ministry's circular letter. The second article is, "Plans to take the South Coast Motorway, the M27, across the New Forest between Cadnam and Ringwood would, quote, destroy the greatest asset in the south of England," Mr. M.A.C. Drummond said at the meeting of Hampshire's Roads and Bridges Committee in Winchester on Monday. He suggested that if the road, designed to run along the south coast between Folkestone and Honiton, were looked at from a national viewpoint instead of just to serve Bournemouth, the route would run just south of Salisbury. The committee had been asked their views on an extension of the M27 from Awer to Cadnam. The route between Portsmouth across Hampshire to Awer had already been agreed, the county surveyor, Mr. H.N. Jenner, told the committee.
Now, let's go back 100 years, Heather.
to Saturday, November the 23rd, 1918. Winchester War Hospital Supply Depot. The total output from the depot during the past week amounted to 11,530 articles, and the following supplies were dispatched as directed by the Director General of Voluntary and Organisations, among others a large consignment being sent to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. 1,090 roller bandages, 9,530 gauze dressings and swabs, 400 brown wool pads, and 350 sectional dressings. And the second item says, the inauguration of the new municipal building of the year was commemorated by the attendance of the Mayor and Corporation of Winchester at the cathedral service on Sunday morning. The members were present in full numbers and were accompanied by the town clerk and other officers. The service opened with the national anthem, and later the choir gave the Hallelujah Chorus, which they so successfully rendered at the Armistice Special Service the previous Monday.
Finally, back 200 years, Noel.
Yes, one item from Saturday, November the 23rd, 1818. It has been our melancholy task this week to record the death of our much-lamented Queen. It is not one of those events which unexpectedly overwhelm the nation with grief. The Queen had enjoyed length of days, and the country, by the continuance of her illness, had been led to expect its fatal termination.
And now it's back to the present, because we've got editorial comment read by Jane.
And that this week is moving in the right direction with plans. The emerging plans for Winchester's movement strategy certainly show promise in the drive to reduce city centre congestion, with measures including keeping cars parked outside the centre, increasing the capacity of the well-used park and ride service, and reintroducing two-way traffic along Friars Gate. It is hoped the measure would prevent the need to circle the entire one-way system to get out of the city, something that would be a necessity if the heavily congested St George's Street is to lose a lane. But, unfortunately, only time will tell, which won't help those fearing the introduction of congestion charge zones if the proposal fail. Neighbouring Southampton has recently gone through a heated period of debate after its administration proposed a chargeable clean air zone that could see commercial vehicles, including buses, coaches and lorries, billed up to £100 a day to enter the city, a move which some feel will kill trade. Of course, the movement strategy is far from set in stone, and the final document published next spring could look very different. One thing that is certain is that the only way to get improvements to Winchester's congested roads is to take part in the consultation process.
Heather's now going to read Question and Answer, My Winchester.
David Kilson, aged 65, a councillor, drone pilot, first responder and rewiring mechanic of Main Road Hursley, tells us his favourite things about Winchester. What is your favourite restaurant or cafe? Palm Pan Asia, but Gandhi comes a very close second. The best cafe is the Hursley Hub in All Saints Church. What is your favourite pub or bar? Two favourites, the Dolphin and the King's Head, both in Hursley. What is your favourite shop? Hursley Village Shop and Post Office. Friendly, classic, welcoming, a real community hub. What is your favourite building? Oh, it has to be the Cathedral, but also Winchester College and the Wickham Arms. What is your favourite view? Looking towards the Isle of Wight from Farley Mount. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? King Alfred's statue, as it reflects the wonderful history of Winchester. What's Winchester's best kept secret? The Hyde Tavern, quaint, welcoming, unspoilt, friendly locals and great beer. What's the best thing about Winchester? Small city with a big history. There are many great walks that start and end in Winchester. And the worst? Oh, the high street trend away from independent shops and restaurants, and the gradual replacement with chains. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? We'll encourage more independent shops through council control before it's too late. Its heart and soul are its visitors and its locals, for whom there needs to be a reason to visit. Describe Winchester in a sentence. It's a great place to live, near everywhere, and fun, with a great sense of history.
Week's first person is by George Hayter, and Noel's going to read it.
Yes, it's headed, "Do You Do Too Much Blowing?" And I suggest you don't listen to this while you're eating a meal. "We've just got the pictures from the photographer. Our daughter radiates happiness in every shot, and the groom looks rather pleased too. The bride's mother? Well, my wife is never happy with the way she looks, and now she's saying that the photographer's high-resolution camera shows too many wrinkles. Actually, she looks beautiful. I'm the problem. It's my nose. Bright red. What a joke. In the photos, it looks like a small, stuck-on clown's nose. I had a cold that day and had been blowing my nose all morning, making it glow like an aviation hazard beacon. I didn't know. The wedding morning was so busy that I didn't see a mirror. With four bridesmaids, as well as our daughter, the makeup lady had fallen behind schedule. The ceremony was at Treetops in Bewley, and it was a rush to get the bride there on time. I barely had a minute to do up my tie, let alone think about stuffing tissues into a pocket. The phlegm was still flowing when I gave away the bride, and I had to sniff and snort all the way through the ceremony. Not as bad as it sounds. I did it during applause and the other loud bits. The funny thing is that by the end of the ceremony, after all that sniffing and snorting, I was almost presentable. I mopped my upper lip with a tissue that my wife managed to get for me, and my nose gave no further trouble. The wedding photographs show its normal monochromatic complexion rapidly returned. Recently, I've done more snorting. I woke this morning with a cold. Instead of reaching for a tissue, I snorted and swallowed. Then no more snorting required for 5 minutes, and not a single sneeze. If I'd blown my nose as normal, I would have needed to blow it again seconds later, and I'd still be sneezing now. Blowing your nose must be a modern phenomenon. When we were cavemen, there were no handkerchiefs. Homo sapiens survived perfectly well without them. In Japan, they're still getting by without blowing their noses, at least not in public. I learned in Tokyo that people there have always considered it gross. Snorting, on the other hand, is perfectly acceptable in Japan. Medical research suggests that blowing can be harmful. It's the pressure. Apparently, it can even blast phlegm into the sinuses. We all consume some phlegm every day just by swallowing. Phlegm is often dirty and infectious, full of dust and germs, but as far as I can gather, it can't do much harm in your stomach. Any germs that you swallow in phlegm will already have been conveyed up the windpipe from your lungs, where the germs had a better chance of getting into the bloodstream. In the stomach, airborne germs are likely to be killed by enzymes and digestive acid. Ask yourself this. If the stuff coming out of your lungs and into your nose was a digestive poison, why would evolution have plumbed your nose to your stomach by giving you a throat? And where does the stuff emerge from your nose? Right by the entrance to your mouth, to your stomach, your mouth. Your nose is not just by your mouth, it's actually on top of your mouth. So when your nose runs, where does gravity take the phlegm? It's almost as if we were designed to drink watery phlegm so that it does us good. Maybe the purpose is to preserve our fluid before modern waterworks, clean water was hard to come by. Or maybe the digestive tract uses nasal output to help the body's immune system to safely identify harmful pathogens and deploy appropriate antibodies. That could explain my cold's rapid retreat. Then there's nose picking. Dirty habit, but a popular one in private. It's instinctive in children, so maybe it's not always harmful and possibly beneficial.
Oh, no. Well, thank you for that, George Hayter. Let's go on and look at the alternative look at the news with the Bulgarian Diary, Jane.
And there are two little articles here. The first one, a test for military genius. And it's topped with two photographs of the same spot looking up the high street towards the West Gate. The first was taken in 2015, which was before the bollards, of course, and shows a military parade marching down the centre of the High Street. And the second shows the High Street now with the new anti-terror barriers in place and the bollards. The bollards, of course, removed, but the new anti-terror barricades are still in place where the army was marching. Many people believe they make the streets of Winchester safer from a Nice or London Bridge-style terrorist attack and provide comfort. They would stop a person in a lorry from wreaking death upon the High Street. Others say they're a waste of public money, that any terrorist intent on killing will find a way. Some say they are rather ugly, brutalist constructions that have no place in the oldest street in the country. The spirit of the concrete tricorn centre in Portsmouth, plonked where Romans, Saxons, Normans and the English have marched or ambled. Others say that the seats and the planters are rather elegant, crisp and unfussy. But as the two photographs that I've just mentioned show, there can be no argument that the newly installed security measures, ironically, will impede any military formation wanting to march down or up the High Street. Regiments often exercise their right to march with guns and music playing along the thoroughfare. Regiments that have or have had the right include the Royal Hampshire Regiment, the Light Infantry, the Royal Green Jackets, and the Rifles. All that is needed for the march is a space about 10 yards wide, relatively straight and flat. The High Street is certainly still flat, pretty straight, but no one could argue that it remains 10 yards wide. When Belgarum earlier this year raised the issue of the freedom marches and the then proposed barriers, we were told by the City Council it would not be an issue, but it certainly looks like the obstructions will test the military's genius for improvisation. And the second, more positive article is US recognition for festive Winchester. Winchester's Christmas offering has received international acclaim, being recognised as one of the most magical Christmas cities in Europe. Winchester was the only UK city to make the New York Post's list of the 9 most magical Christmas cities in Europe. The description reads, "This peaceful market town lights up with a delightful Christmas market and an ice skating rink in the shadow of the medieval Winchester Cathedral, where Christmas hymns echo through the longest nave in Europe." And here there are 3 photos, one of the bustling Christmas market with all its stalls around the ice rink and people shopping and looking very happy. Another is a huge copper pot, which I'm slightly thinking probably holds mulled wine. And the last one is a very large gadget turning round roasting chestnuts for those visiting the Christmas market.
Now, here's what's on. Now, the Tuesday lunchtime recitals are still on at Romsey Abbey, and they go on from 1:10 to 1:50. Celebrating 50 years, radio scripts based on a nationally adored BBC sitcom will be performed in Basingstoke. A two-man army will play 25 beloved characters from the BBC classic Dad's Army to celebrate 50 years since the show first hit the screens. The Haymarket is the venue for the performance entitled Dad's Army Radio Hour on November the 27th at 7:30 p.m. The act is a Double Fringe First Award winner, David Benson, from Think No Evil of Us, My Life with Kenneth Williams, Boris, World King, and Goodnight Sweetheart, and also Jack Lane, Wisdom of a Fool. Tickets are available from the Anvil box office for £19, which includes a £3 booking fee. The traditional panto at the Theatre Royal Winchester is Beauty and the Beast, and runs from the 1st of December to the 6th of January. Details and tickets from the box office 01962 840440 or theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. And on Saturday, the 8th of December at 7:30 p.m, the Alsford Community Choir Carol Concert at St John's Church. Doors open at 7 p.m. Tickets are £12 to £15 and can be purchased from the Oakleaf Stationery, West Street, or www.ulsfordchoir.com. Now, recently, to celebrate the remembrance period, there's a new book published called Debt of Honour, Winchester City's First World War Dead, by Jen Best, the author, and edited by Tom Beaumont James, and he also introduces it. Winchester City men served and died in all three services and in all theatres of war in the Great War. They joined a wide range of units from home and the colonies. However, they have no engraved memorial of their names, unlike those from other towns and villages in Hampshire. Through a brief introduction and reconstructed biographies under their names and their Winchester addresses, this book commemorates their sacrifice, repaying a debt of honour to these forgotten men a century on. The memorial biographies are accompanied by a reprint of the War Service Register for the City of Winchester, which was a record published by the city in 1921, and it was believed to be a full record of those who served and died. Professor James told me that the Winchester men fought in all theatres of war. 9 died on the first day of the Somme, about 200 were in the Hampshires, and many died as prisoners of the Turks. The chap on the cover of the book was a cathedral bell ringer who died 6 days after the armistice as a prisoner of the Turks. Sailors died at Coronel off the coast of central Chile in November 1914 and Jutland in 1916. And one on a paddle mine sweeper on the 10th of November 1918 when it was torpedoed. But everyone has a story which is included in Debt of Honour. This book gives each of them a mini biography 100 years on. There are 458 or 459 of them because one chap, Rifleman Albert Moore, served and was wounded and then they wouldn't let him back in the army. So he re-enlisted in his mother's name, Marshall, only to be killed in 1916. 3 Cox brothers from Culver Road, 15 each from Wales Street and the Brooks, which were the poor areas of the town, are also mentioned. The Debt of Honour, Winchester City's First World War Dead, is 466 pages and is published by Hobnob Press, 1995 hardcover, $14.95 from Amazon with free post and package, or from Wells Bookshop or Winchester University Bookshop. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 23rd of November at 7:35 a.m. and begins at 4:09 p.m. On Wednesday the 28th of November, it ends at 7:42 a.m. and begins at 4:04 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And if there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. Go on to items of general news, starting with one read by Jane.
And the first one is date set for return of Cathedral's Lantern Parade. A date has been set for the return of the annual Winchester Cathedral Lantern Parade. Participants are invited to bring their handmade lanterns to the cathedral on November the 29th at 6 p.m. Spectators will be able to see the procession pass through the cathedral close at 6:30 p.m, where there will also be live entertainment. Local musicians will provide live concerts. The Winchester branch of Churches Together will lead carol singing, and the event will end with a firework display. Those wishing to enter themselves to walk with a lantern must register for free at www.winchester-cathedral.org.uk or by calling 01962 857 275. Following last year's success, the festive procession has successfully secured a space in the city's annual Christmastime activities. And this is accompanied by a spectacular photograph of a group of people outside the cathedral in the dark from last year's lantern parade, with 2 youngsters carrying an enormous long model of the cathedral made out of tissue or paper but painted on sticks. It must be 3 or 4 feet long, and painted in beautiful colours and presumably with a lantern inside it that will make it glow as they walk on their long lantern parade.
Pupils pay respects. A number of schools across the Winchester district have paid their respects to fallen soldiers following Armistice Day commemorations, writes Sam Hatherley. Every student from Henry Beaufort contributed to the school's memorial by writing a message on an origami dove. The doves were then placed along the corridor of the main reception area. Members of the Peter Simmons rugby team travelled to Compiègne in France and came third in the Armistice Rugby Festival. They also visited historical war and memorial sites in the city. Head of art at Twyford School, Leanne Hinksman, designed and painted a 9-foot canvas to mark the centenary of the end of the First World War, depicting a soldier, all in grey, leaning on his rifle at a small white cross, clearly thinking of his fallen comrades. The children each made a little red poppy, and all these poppies are put onto panels at the sides of this drawing painting. Members of the St Thomas's Old Boys Association, parents of students and current soldiers, helped to make up an attendance of around 2,000 people at King's School Service. Student Flo Linda played the last post, and each student placed a marker in the school's Remembrance Garden.
Hundreds Back campaign to improve safety on busy road. More than 1,000 people have signed a petition in a bid to improve safety on a busy Winchester road. Residents of Worthy Road have been campaigning for a crossing to be installed near their homes for 5 years. The road is the main route for children walking to St Bede Church of England Primary School. Now more than 1,000 residents have signed a petition in a bid to have their voices heard, and on Sunday were joined by 2 fancy dress zebras to raise the awareness of the issue. The campaigners will now put their case to councillors at a meeting on November the 29th. Mother of 3, Lucy McLaughlin, said, "I am so impressed by the overwhelming support we have had from local residents. It's clear that everyone is desperate to have 2 safe pedestrian crossings installed on Worthy Road. It's a worthy cause. After years of campaigning, it is time for the council to listen and act. No more excuses." This activity follows a recent attempt from the residents to show the importance of the crossing. As previously reported on November the 2nd, they inflated a temporary pop-up crossing which cars stopped at to let children cross. Residents said they've been campaigning since 2013, but the Hampshire County Council says the volume of traffic across a 24-hour period is insufficiently heavy to qualify for a crossing. And there's a lovely picture in the high street of lots of parents and children, the children holding up yellow signs protesting for their crossing, and they're also holding up a big, colourful "Safe Crossings for Worthy Road" banner. Above 2 zebras looking a bit lazy, lying on the ground. And there's a lovely little boy at the end, the left-hand end of all the campaigners. And his sign says, "This campaign started before I was even born."
And here we have Birthday Bash sees charity's loyal supporters celebrated. Loyal supporters, trustees, volunteers and members of staff joined together to celebrate the 21st birthday of Naomi House and Jack's Place. The hospice charity threw the special party in the Mike Channon suite at St Mary's Stadium. It marks the end of a variety of fundraising and celebratory events which the charity has been hosting across the year to mark its anniversary. More than 200 guests were welcomed to the stadium by All That Swing, a local swing duo, while the charity's chief executive, Mark Smith, gave a speech before a 3-course dinner. Mr. Smith said, "We were delighted to be joined by so many long-term and new supporters who came out to help us celebrate our 21st birthday in style. We are so proud of how far the hospices have progressed over the years, and we're very much looking forward to the next 21 years, which will involve continuing the development and innovation of Naomi House and Jack's Place. The children, young adults and families we serve are at the centre of what we do, and we wouldn't be able to provide that vital care without the enormous generosity and continued regular support from our community. The hospices wanted to recognise the long-term support that many individuals and corporate companies have shown over the years, so the evening followed with speeches and an award ceremony. The Peter Lee Award for long-term support went to St Mark's Over 60s Club, which has raised over £20,000 for Naomi House and Jack's Place since 1995. The Mary Cornelius Reed Award for Innovation went to Red Row Homes, who donated fixtures and fittings to be used in the family accommodation at the hospices and helped renovate several Naomi House charity shops. The Chief Executive's Award for Community Support went to June Davey, a member of the community who has been organising fundraising events since before the hospices were even built. Meanwhile, the Life President's Award for Voluntary Service went to the team of volunteer gardeners. And this is accompanied by a photo of local supporters, Silver Linings, who are all beautifully dressed and toasting this long celebration of Naomi House with glasses of something sparkling.
PR honour for Professor. A charity volunteer has been honoured for his work in public relations. Tom Watson, who has lived in Winchester for more than 40 years and is a trustee of the Friends of Winchester Cathedral and a volunteer with homeless charity Trinity Winchester, was recognised by the Chartered Institute of Public Relations, CIPR. Professor Watson, an emeritus professor in the Faculty of Media and Communication at Bournemouth University, has been named as one of CIPR's 70 at 70 members who've made an outstanding contribution to the Institute and to the wider PR industry. It comes as the Institute celebrates its 70th anniversary year. His nomination was made by the Chartered Institute of Public Relations membership and judged by an independent committee. The president, Sarah Hall, said the Institute wanted to celebrate the practitioners who regularly go above and beyond. In 2017, Professor Watson was given the rare honour of being appointed an honorary fellow of the Chartered Institute of Public Relations for his research. He joined Bournemouth University in 2007. And developed a wide-ranging research into public relations practice and history. His jointly authored book, Evaluating Public Relations, is now in its third edition and is a standard reference book around the world. Another initiative was the International History of Public Relations Conference, which has its 10th anniversary in June 2019, and which Professor Watson continues to help organise each year. Although he has retired from Bournemouth University at the end of 2015, Professor Watson continues his research, publishes articles and book chapters, edits an academic journal on special issues and books, and gives guest lectures.
Here's another item about Naomi House. The headline is Hospice Charity Launches Appeal to Recruit Nurses. A Winchester hospice charity has launched a new campaign in a bid to recruit new nurses. Naomi House and Jack's Place started the Could You Be My Nurse project to demonstrate the working environment an applicant can expect if they were to apply. It is focused around the happiness and joy that children and young adults share with each other and every nurse, and also recognises the importance of the vital medical care the nurses provide. The campaign has been written from the perspective of a child. I need expert care. Could you be my nurse? The idea is also to promote the fact that, as well as having the largest practice education team in the country, all nurses in employment at the hospice are valued, rewarded and developed. Sadie, one of the nurses at Naomi House and Jack's place, said, "Being part of the nursing team is so rewarding. I have to constantly maintain my clinical skills to ensure I can deal with the most complex medical conditions. I have time to get to know the children so that I can care for them in the best possible way, making sure they enjoy their stay at the hospices in a safe and happy environment. Nurses with over a year of post-qualification experience in the field can apply via the hospice's website."
And here we have Cathedral Tree Plan Backlash.
Mm.
A planning application to fell a perfectly healthy yew tree in the Winchester Cathedral grounds has caused backlash amongst residents. The proposed work involves the complete felling of a yew tree which stands within the rear garden of the deanery in the close, which is made known to the City Council in September. The application states that there are two reasons for wanting to fell the tree, despite admitting that it is quite a young age for the species. It reads, "The proposal arises as a direct result of recent archaeological investigations into the condition of the medieval Lochburn stream, which runs under the existing buildings and grounds within the close. Coincidentally, plans are being drawn up for a second stage of proposed development at the deanery following those which have recently been completed. The tree unfortunately directly conflicts with these emerging proposals and endangers the stability of the underground Lochburn. Can and Annabel Boys, Receiver General at the Cathedral, supports the plan. She said, "As custodians and guardians of the cathedral estates, we need to strike a balance between caring for our natural environment and protecting our heritage. In this case, the difficult decision has been made to fell a tree in very close proximity to the medieval Lochburn in order to preserve this important medieval structure from further damage. The Lochburn is one of the earliest surviving drainage systems in the country, dating from 1090, and it is a site of great historic significance. However, Winchester residents believe that these are not valid reasons for felling a healthy yew. Among Dr. Catherine and four other people who have publicly objected via the City Council's website is Barbara Coote. She said, "My understanding is that yew trees are a protected species. I can see no reason whatsoever for destroying this mature specimen and can only see a disadvantage and a very bad example by the cathedral in needlessly killing a healthy tree with a view to replacing it eventually with an unnecessary road."
Now a nicer piece about the cathedral with an unfortunate headline. It's called "A Nice Surprise," as in an ice, as girls join festivities. Choristers from Winchester Cathedral took to the ice last week in an event that has become a Christmas tradition in the city. However, this year, the girls joined in on the rink for the first time in its 13-year history to help launch the annual Christmas market in the cathedral grounds. And there's a photograph of five choristers in their long red robes laughing as they take to the ice with slightly less experience than the boys that we usually see a photograph of, but clearly having a wonderful time. In ice skating tickets are now open to the public, costing between £6.95 and £11, with a number of concessions and packages available. Sessions run daily, with the first starting at 10 a.m. and the last at 8 p.m. The rink is here as part of the annual Winchester Christmas Market, which opened on Saturday. It helped kick off the festival period in Winchester for 2018 after the city's lights were switched on last Thursday. Last year, the market was recognised as one of the best in Europe. It is open from 10:30 a.m. every day, with lots of wooden chalets full of items to browse.
And now get ready for the Christmas spirit. Festive fun coming to the Watercress line. Father Christmas and his jolly helpers will take residents to a special journey across the countryside next month. The Watercress line's highly anticipated Santa special steam locomotive will chuff into town again. Families will have the chance to travel across the heart of the countryside in a festive train carriage with Santa and his jolly helpers. Running from December the 1st until Christmas Eve, every child on board will receive a gift from Father Christmas, as well as a soft drink, gingerbread man, and activity pack to keep them entertained on the one-hour journey, while grown-ups will be treated to white wine and mince pies. Guests of all ages are also asked to bring their very best singing voices to join in with everyone's favourite Christmas songs. Woody's Mountford, marketing manager at the Watercress Line, said Santa Special is a real highlight for families from Hampshire and beyond at Christmas. It's one of the only Santa experiences where families don't need to queue. And we love seeing children's faces light up during the magical trip when Father Christmas visits them in their seats and delivers presents. On both December 26th and 27th, the festive spirit will continue with the Watercress Line's popular Christmas Leave, giving visitors the chance to join civilian and military reenactors. Alsford and Alton stations will bring together reenactors and the general public to enjoy live 1940s wartime music and parlour games, steam and seasonal merriment. Ms. Mountford added, "Our popular Christmas Leave is the perfect event to bring your family and guests to after Christmas. Whether this is a trip down memory lane or a chance to make new memories, it's enjoyable for everyone. We hope everyone will dress up in 40s attire, mingle with reenactors and embrace the atmosphere at Christmas Leave. It's as much about reliving this period as enjoying the rush of the steam engine, so be sure to jump on board one of our locomotives to experience the entire event."
And here we have New Homes Plan. Civic chiefs were set to approve plans last night to sell off a piece of Kingsworthy land to housing developers. Winchester City Council's Housing Committee was due to meet on Wednesday evening after the Chronicle went to press to discuss the proposals for Mountbatten Place. According to a report to councillors, the land, which is currently occupied by 20 garages, will be sold to Footstep Living Limited, who plan to build 8 affordable homes. It states, "The disposal of the land, including garages, will generate a small capital receipt for the housing revenue account, although the amount is yet to be confirmed as negotiations are ongoing. However, any money from the sale could be cancelled out by the loss of rental income generated through the garages, depending on the agreed figure. Initial predictions estimate a £30,000 profit for the City Council, according to the report. The move comes after the Winchester-based firm Footstep approached the council in May 2014. It proposes building homes through reduced construction cost, meaning the home can be sold at a lower price to a first-time buyer. A covenant would also be placed on the properties restricting the future resale price to 75% of the market value. The development would consist of 2 two-bedroom houses and 6 one-bedroom flats and come as part of the City Council's push for more homes in the district. As previously reported, Councillor Caroline Horrell made a pledge to increase housing building targets to 600 new homes by 2021. If, as expected, councillors approve the sale of the land, it would first need to go to the Secretary of State for approval, as Footsteps is not a registered affordable homes provider. They would then submit a planning application for the scheme, with no risk to the council if it was thrown out by the planners. The move comes after last week's report on an affordable homes plan in South Wanston. As reported, angry residents have launched an action group to fight the development of 16 properties which they feel are not suitable for the village. And this is accompanied by the space in Kingsworthy known as Mountbatten Place, and the garages are not actually visible there, but there's a green area with trees which must be part of the area proposed.
Apprentice scheme is underway. Staff at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital are now able to provide apprenticeships after becoming a certified training provider. The Winchester Hospitals, run by the Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, along with 2 other hospitals in the county. Recently, the Trust received accreditation from the Education and Skills Funding Agency to become a main provider of apprenticeships. Diane Pittard, Associate Director of Nursing for Professional Development, Education and Workforce Development, said, "Becoming a training provider of apprenticeships is really exciting. It enables us to grow our own workforce and deliver the highest standard of training. We see our apprenticeship programs as a real opportunity to respond to the Trust's training needs, develop programs that excel in quality and delivery, and invest in our staff so they are well equipped to meet the needs of our patients." And Diane added, "I am delighted to see our first group of healthcare support worker apprentices begin their learning journey. Through the course, our apprentices will gain the knowledge, skills, competence and confidence to provide outstanding care to our patients."
MP calls for apology after trains cancelled. A Hampshire MP has demanded an apology on behalf of commuters for the travel chaos caused by overrunning engineering works that effectively cancelled a large number of trains in the county. On Monday morning, Southwestern Railway, the main operator in Hampshire, which runs services from Southampton, Eastleigh, Winchester and other smaller stations to London, urged commuters not to travel. Company bosses warned that as a result of overrunning engineering works in London, all lines were blocked between London Waterloo and Surbiton, while Woking, Surbiton, Raynes Park and Earlsfield stations were all closed. Winchester MP Steve Bryan branded the chaos on the railways as totally unacceptable. He said, "The travelling public have had a miserable few months, and I can say, both as a commuter and a local MP, we are absolutely at the end of our tether. It's not acceptable to say, don't travel. People make plans. They have jobs. They need to get on with their lives. Network Rail and Southwestern Railway need to get together and deliver on the promises Southwestern Railway made to my constituents when they won the franchise 16 months ago. We need them to get a grip and work together. Acting on the recently published Holden Review would be a good place to start. Overrunning engineering work seems to be the least of their problems right now, but they need to eliminate these failures. I've written to Southwest Rowers and a Network Rail asking for a full explanation and an apology on my desk, which I'll be publishing for my constituents to read. The works have been scheduled to be finished by 4:30 a.m. to allow time for trains to leave depots and get to stations around the county. On Monday morning, Southwestern Railway said, due to overrunning engineering works between London Waterloo and Surbiton, all lines are blocked. Passengers are advised not to travel. Woking, Surbiton, Raynes Park and Earlsfield stations are currently closed. Since Mr. Bryan made his comments, though, a Network Rail spokesman said, "We are very sorry to passengers for the serious disruptions to services on the Southwestern Rail network. This was caused by overrunning engineering work near Surbiton, which meant we were unable to open a number of lines into Waterloo Station."
And now, refurbished trains unveiled, continuing the theme. The first in a fleet of refurbished trains has been introduced as part of a multi-million pound effort to create more seats on local services to London. Southwestern Railway is creating 32 extra standard class seats in the five-coach class 444 electric units, which are used on the run from Weymouth to Waterloo. The rail company, which took over the South West franchise in 2017, is spending £50 million on refurbishing both the Class 444 and the other 450 trains which run on other routes. Its investment has created around 200 jobs at Siemens Eastleigh operation. The first refurbished train entered service this week, with all 45 due to be delivered by May. First-class seating will take up less space, and the company is getting rid of the guards' accommodation and the buffet car, with all refreshments served from a trolley instead. Southwestern Railway Manager Director Andy Mellors was on the first of the trains as it entered service. He said, "The 444 fleet has been in service for around 15 years. Some of them are starting to look quite tired. They would have been due a refurbishment around this time anyway. With the challenge of capacity, what we've done is taken the opportunity to reconfigure the train interior. There were difficult choices to be made because the train length is fixed. These are five-car trains. First-class accommodation has been reconfigured to take up less space, but with the addition of leather seats and wireless mobile phone charging." Mr. Mellors said, we've dropped from 35 to 32 seats, so a fairly modest reduction in first class, but we've been able to provide significantly more standard class seats. The refurbishment will create 1,440 more seats across the fleet, and Mr. Mellors said the company was also planning to run more 10-car services from Waterloo.
County finances set to get six-figure permits boost. And there's a photograph of Upper Brook Street in Winchester with parked cars along the side, and you can see that there's a notice saying permit holders only Monday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Proposed increases in the cost of parking permits in Winchester are set to yield a six-figure boost to the County Council. The County Council is proposing to increase the costs of residents' parking permits from £22 to £50. Income from the 2,228 residents' permits would rise from £50,336 to £114,400. Proceeds of the 1,924 visitors' permits would rise from £43,328 to £96,200. The income from the £22 permits in 2017 was £92,664. If raised to £50, the income generated would be £210,600, a net increase of around £117,000 a year, so more than double. The numbers were revealed following a question from Liberal Democrat Councillor Martin Todd at a council meeting held last week. Councillor Jan Warwick, the City Council portfolio holder for Environment, said the number of parking permits was set to increase as new parking zones are being introduced in Stanmore, Winnell and Week to counter commuter parking. These are not yet fully operational. Councillor Warwick said it is not possible to say at this time how many more permits will be purchased as a result of these schemes, and we are also currently consulting with residents of Highcliffe regarding possible new zones. As part of the consultation process, residents are informed that the price of permits is subject to periodic review. Most of the city, including Highcliffe, St Cross, Hyde, Fulflood and Abbots Barton, has been covered by the parking zones for up to 20 years.
Mayor opens new park for Winnell youngsters. The Mayor of Winchester was on hand to officially open a new children's play area earlier last weekend. Councillor Frank Pearson was joined by the City Council's mascot Wonky the Woodpecker when he officially opened the upgraded park in Winnell Manor Road. The Knight and Castle themed play area, which cost £120,000, is part of the Wonky Trail, a series of routes taking children to play areas across the district. Families at the event were offered free refreshments and children were given cupcakes, colouring activities and goodie bags provided by the play area company Wicksteed Leisure. The City Council's sport and physical activity team were also at the opening to provide attendees with sporting tasks and games. And there's three photographs here of children in the play area all gathered together and some children receiving their cupcakes. And two pictures of Wonky the Woodpecker, who, to be honest, looks more wonky than Woodpecker.
Now thousands of pounds raised for good causes and charities. Freemasons in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight donated £340,000 to dozens of local charities and good causes last year. Cheques were presented at a series of events throughout the province that includes Christchurch and Bournemouth. Dignitaries included mayors, councillors, an MP and Lord Lieutenant attended the presentation evenings. They heard representatives of the charities and good causes speak about the work they do in the community. Mike Wilkes, the provincial Grand Master for the Freemasons, said, "Charity is one important part of what it is to be a Freemason, and on top of our members' regular donations to our Masonic Charitable Foundation, lodges also raise money themselves to benefit their communities. We're proud to be supporting our communities. We will continue to raise money and help where we can. And there is a photograph of Mike Wilkes looking very cheerful and wearing all his Freemason medals and I believe they call it an apron, I'm not sure, after the report of this large amount of money raised.
Services named most relaxing. A service station near Winchester has been named one of the United Kingdom's most relaxing A-road surface areas. A new study has revealed that Sutton Scotney Services, located on the A34, is one of the region's highest rated road stops. According to research by independent transport watchdog Transport Focus, in the study, Sutton Scotney scored a satisfaction rate of 97%, with 86% of motorists leaving the site relaxed or happy. Mark Fox, who's the CEO of Roadchief, which runs the stop, said, "It is a testament to our team and the investment we have made at our sites that customers are leaving in a more relaxed and happy state than when they arrived. Research like this highlights the key role our service plays, because if you're tired and stop during your journey, you will return to your vehicle happier, more relaxed, and ultimately less likely to cause an accident."
Unanimous approval for new homes. Plans have been unanimously approved to demolish a Winchester bungalow and replace it with two new homes. The decision will now see the home at 18 Dean Lane take down, knocked down, with a three-bedroom and four-bedroom house taking over the site, both of which will be detached. Despite winning the support of Winchester City Council's planning committee last week, the scheme received nearly 40 letters of objection, 15 of which came after the proposal had been amended. Concerned residents feared the scheme would be an overdevelopment, would be too dense for a semi-rural area, and could cause safety problems with the increased traffic on Dean Lane. However, council officers reassured the committee that the scheme included adequate parking, and planning agent Hugh Thomas said construction vehicles would be managed to avoid issues on the narrow lane.
County cash to help fund local projects. £500,000 is to be spent helping local town and parish councils get projects off the ground. Financed by Hampshire County Council and the Hampshire Association of Local Councils, the Parish and Town Council Investment Fund will be available for the county's smaller authorities to apply for. If successful, they will be allowed to use the money to enhance existing or provide new infrastructure which supports their communities, such as community centres, make their areas more resilient, which includes tackling social isolation, fund training to support local residents to deliver services in the area, such as maintaining rights of way. Countryside and Rural Affairs Chief and Lead Member for the Town and Parish Council Partnership, Councillor Edward Heron, launched the fund with support from Hampshire's Association of Local Councils, HALC, at their annual general meeting earlier this month.
That's all we've got time for this week. That's the week ending 23rd of November 2018. Thank you very much to our editors Sheila Shepherd, Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard and Jean Gardner. And thanks too to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have a really enjoyable week ahead. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.